From GEICO Subconscious News, I'm Tammy Racing Thoughts, broadcasting from your brain. Tonight's top worry. If something happens to your apartment and you need to, like, stay in a hotel and pay for it, that would be crazy, right? Art Palpitations has more.
That would be crazy, Tammy, but you got surprisingly affordable renter's insurance through GEICO, so it could be covered, giving you peace of mind.
Aww, I love a story that ends well.
Next up, love stories. Are they all they're cracked up to be?
It feels good to worry less. It feels good to GEICO.
It's my Maybot Toaster. Hello, welcome back to the final episode of the series. Oh, sad times, sad times. Luckily, though, it's good news because I've got a fantastic guest who I've been hounding for ages, and she's finally joining me on the show. It's the wonderful Izzy Sutty. Hello, Izzy, how are you?
Hello. I think this is the most rescheduled any podcast I've ever done.
Is that a record for me? I'm thrilled with that.
Not because I didn't want to do it, just because things kept coming up, didn't they? Then I had the super cold and I was like, I think I texted you and said I sound like I'm underwater.
And I think it's important not for no one to listen to you when you sound that bad. I hate sounding. Oh. There's nothing worse when you put the radio on and you hear, I tell you who does it, Jeremy Vine does it. He'll have a cold and he'll power through. And it's like, mate, you sound, you may feel okay, but to listen to, it's not a pleasant experience.
It's, you know, my dad never took a day off work. That was like his thing of, I've never taken a day off work. But actually, I don't necessarily think that's a good thing these days. Like, I feel like in the 60s, I never take a day off work. You sort of go, oh, great, well done. But now it's like, mate, take a day off work, watch Netflix, get into bed. Yeah. You sound,
That is a very boomer approach, isn't it?
Definitely.
It's the Monty Python Holy Grail sketch with it's just a scratch. Don't worry about it. It's fine. Like, no, just step off, guys. Step off.
Yeah. Although I think I do it a little bit too easily sometimes. I'm like, I can't possibly. Not that I did that with this.
Yeah. Six reschedules is a definite record for me, Izzy. You know, looking at my diary, going, oh, I've got Izzy for a toaster in today. It won't happen. So I'll just organise some golf instead. And lo and behold, there I am on the second tee when I get the message.
You a favour.
Exactly.
I have been filming something. I haven't just been sounding like I'm underwater.
No, and it's brilliant what you're filming, but we're not going to talk about that. Okay, so listen, here we go, Izzy. I've got your Amazon account open. It's in front of me. You don't need to have it open in front of you. We're just going to have a little look through, a little browse through, okay? How are you feeling about that? Everything fine? Perfectly calm?
Yeah, it is weird. Like I said to Ellis before I sent the link through, I'm actually going to send him. Also, I think it's probably the most juvenile password you've ever had, is it?
Superb password. Well, Jason Manford's password was Tom Price is a knob, which he has assured me he's changed now. But it might still be.
Actually, that is a password no one would ever guess.
I don't know. There's a lot of people feel that way.
Actually, would the whole world guess it?
Exactly. But yours is pure filth. And sadly, we can't repeat it because it's yours to stay, right? You're going to keep this password.
Well, yeah. And you said, did you change it just for this? But actually, no. That's just my sense of humour now. I've got two small children and that's the extent of it. Yeah, I feel a bit weird about it. Like I said to Ellis, am I going to give him he said that I can either send him a kind of curated version of what I've bought, or I can just send him. And I did think about doing the curated version, and I thought, actually, no, it's a bit more interesting just to give him the password, but it's a bit weird.
Yes, thank you. Exactly. You're taking the leap. This is exactly what I try to encourage. And most guests do that. They just hand the stuff over and trust me, which is so stupid. But you know what? I've had a little browse through and there's no skeletons in this closet. There is, however, the first purchase you made, Izzy, right? We're going to go right back to 2007. Okay.
Okay.
So 14 years ago, October 2007. And you bought a film. Okay. This is a movie called Pave Lakim, which translates as The Traveller Girl.
Yeah. Wow. That's my first ever purchase. How amazing. I've still got that. I got it on DVD because I think that was before Prime Video. You probably know better than me.
Streaming was a dream at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a material physical object of the film. Yeah.
Yeah. Pave Lakim is an amazing film that's kind of, as I remember it, I haven't seen it for a long time, since probably October 2007, part documentary, part feature film. So they sort of got... So Pave Lakim is the character of a girl who's part of a traveller family, and they got a community of travellers to be the actors in it. And I don't, as I remember, think they've done any acting. but it's sort of, and that's the kind of film that I really like. So it's got this sort of slight dogma element to it where a bit of it's improvised and it's not lit very well and it's kind of caught on the hoof, but there is a plot to it as well. So it isn't a documentary. And I haven't ever seen anything else like it, actually.
I'm much like you. I'm always drawn to films where you feel like I don't really like superstars in films. I don't like actors who I know. It's a real thing.
Well, that's the problem about doing stand-up, isn't it? I can't watch a British thing without going, oh, that's so and so. And I find it really, can you concentrate after you know?
No, once I see Jack Whitehall playing some random, I don't know who it is, there's the Jungle Cruise film that's just come out and he's, you know, or James Corden popping up, or, you know, because there's two elements to this. There's the element where I'm like, fuck, how did you get that? But also, mainly, the main element, he lies, is just, it just breaks the illusion big time.
And also, not say anything against those two, I've not met James Corden, but the hard thing is if you know someone's a bit of a dick and you see them in something and you're like, oh, they were in a dressing room once, they took the last croissant. Yes. I've never had a croissant in a dressing room before stand-up, but you know what I'm saying. Or they introduced me and they wound the mic lead around the mic and then put it into the stand so that when I got on, I had to unwind it, which is such a classic, horrible compare trick, isn't it? And then once you know that, you're like, oh God, like they're paying a nice person and I can't.
It's very important that stand-ups bear a grudge for the most minor indiscretion.
Oh my God, I remember things that happened ridiculous. In open mic nights in like 2003. Do you?
Seriously, I recently ended up at a pub with someone who I had beef 20 years ago. 21 years ago, he was a dick at an open mic night. He was a dick to the audience. He was pissed and he was a dick. And I saw him recently and my mutual friend was like, oh, you don't like him, do you? And I was like, I've been in London for 4 weeks and I literally haven't seen him since like 20 years ago. And within minutes we talked about it and it was obviously fine. But you hold on to these things.
No, you do. Well, it's good that you talked about it, because there's another stand-up who said to me, this is probably 10 years ago in Edinburgh. She said, oh, I came to see your show. And I was like, oh. And then she went, yeah. And I was like, okay. Well, and I was in a really vulnerable, anyone listening to this who isn't a stand-up and hasn't done Edinburgh will think it's not a real job doing Edinburgh, but it does sort of send you a bit off the rails, doesn't it? Being up there and being so obsessed with your own show and sales. And also we're normally losing tens of thousands of pounds as well. And it really, really stuck with me. Toxic combo. And I cannot let it go. And my friends find it really funny that I can't. My friends in stand-up, but I cannot let it go. It was just that.
Ridiculous.
Yeah. You know, to go, yeah.
But don't
it's
you
like
think?
If someone said, I love you, and you just went, yeah.
Mm-hmm. 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 But there is that any conversation anyone has about your artistic output, no matter what it is, but especially a stand-up at Edinburgh, that is as intimate and fraught as a I love you conversation. That's what people have to understand.
It's worse. It's worse.
Because there's more at stake. It's more important. But the main sort of, the main worry that I have when you say this is, fuck, how many times have I done this? Because I am just a blabbermouth. I don't say the right thing. I just say the first thing that comes out of my ass and I walk on. Like, I worry there's a trail of destruction conversationally behind me.
But you know what? I will have done it as well. And it's actually, I'm a real people pleaser. And you know, it kills me to think that I have actually made people feel like that. But I know that I will have done, especially when booze is involved.
Yeah,
and it's not necessarily a malicious intent. It's literally like thinking about something else at the same time or worrying about your own show. Or maybe your insecurity is coming through, but not in a deliberate way. So it's, I know.
Yeah,
I've never heard people go, Tom Price is going around saying, I saw a show the other day. Yeah.
I don't know, it's just because people care so little about what I say. But I would also say that I've enjoyed the fact you have not connected the dots and gone, well, I know I've done it and I didn't mean it, so therefore that person probably didn't mean it. Like, no, that's not happening. Anyway, listen, so this film, also like, the naturalistic thing as well, and I have, having had a little sneak through your Amazon already, which I don't normally do, Izzy, I don't know why.
Oh, maybe don't you?
No, I've just been having I've been seeing it for 20 minutes, having a little idle browse through. But I've spotted a lot of Shane Meadows, oh my God, and that is the epitome of that kind of thing, right?
Yeah, no, it is, yeah, God. And Dead Man's Shoes is filmed in my hometown of Matlock.
Oh, yes,
so,
of course.
I mean, God. So there's a Dead Man's Shoes tour, I think, you can do of all the locations. And the really odd thing is, Where are you from? You're from Wales, aren't you?
Yeah, but we have got connection. We've had this conversation before because my wife is from that neck of the woods. She's from Chesterfield.
Yes, that's right. But yeah, you're from Monmouth.
Correct.
Yes. Is there a film set in Monmouth?
The thing they're filming there at the moment, very near Monmouth at the moment, is Sex Education. That's
okay.
All happening near there.
And I think it's all really beautiful landscapes and stuff. And
yes, yeah. Yes. The Y Valley, they've turned that into this weird sort of pseudo-Californian type thing, which is a big leap. That's some good writing right there. They have put a good filter on that shit.
But what's really weird is, so with Dead Man's Shoes, which in a sense doesn't paint Matlock in the best light, I guess, like there's a lot of kind of, you know, it's a gritty film. There isn't not a lot of sunshine or like beautiful shots of Chatsworth House or something that's nearby, you know. And, you know, it's kind of much more gritty than that, for want of a better word. But what's really interesting is you'll sort of go, oh, my God, that's Crown Square. Oh, my God, that's the pub where I went and had my first pint when I was 13. And it's really so odd and quite discombobulating seeing just a stretch of grey pavement near Woolworths that you used to walk along every day of your life. I just love it. I absolutely love it.
It's so true. But seeing the randomness and the sort of all these odd places that you know so well, seeing them immortalised and put on film, it sort of puts things into order somehow, doesn't it? It kind of, I don't know, it's a neatening of it. I like it. It puts it into a compartment somehow.
Yes, I do know what you mean. And also I think Matlock, and I do always write about Matlock in wherever I make creatively, I suppose, but like it is a very beautiful place. And the landscapes, I really, really miss the peaks and I really miss the cliffs and I really miss like the colour of the hills and I sort of feel like my heart is still there.
Beautiful. Oh, I love it up there.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I feel very lucky to have grown up there. Because I wasn't born there. I was born in Hull, but we just moved there when I was 6 because my dad got a job there. But I do really consider it home. But now I've essentially married a Welsh person, there's no chance of us moving back. They'd be like, well, why would we move to Matlock when we've got Carmarthen? Well, whenever I do an impression of him, he's got quite a high voice these days. That's just happened over lockdown. Anyway.
He also sounds so indignant. You're doing indignant Welsh.
But I can't really do accents, you see. I have to do, well, why would I? I wouldn't do that. Yeah.
But Ellis James has the most perfect Welsh accent.
It's got very
ever.
Soft, like if you ever want, gentle.
Yeah, it's the Queen's English of Welsh accents.
You're like right.
You know, if you ever need to build a Welsh accent, you just give Ellis James a call, which I'm sure you could do. All right, so we're going to plough on through. We're going forwards now,
okay.
Izzy. We're going into 2010 now, because you didn't buy anything in 2008 or 2009.
Didn't
so that's fine. No, or you've deleted it all.
So I bought Pavi Lakin, and that's very interesting, isn't it? Okay, go on.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that amazing, though? The idea that you could park Amazon for a couple of years like that. What a world.
Where was
we
I
lived
getting
in.
Everything from?
The FOP. Shops that have all had to close down. FOP, fucking FOP, HMV.
I think, I used to buy a lot of music and film, but it must have been from FOP because I used to love going there and actually touching the things before you buy them rather than just clicking on a screen. Yeah.
Yeah,
how odd,
I know,
though.
I know. Well, FOP is still open and somehow, and it's still there. There's one on Charing Cross Road, isn't there?
Oh, I love FOP.
So good. So then there's a really interesting load of purchases that you've made. Again, October, 23rd of
this
October.
This is so weird. What happens in October that, go on?
Well, I just think, I don't know. You tell me if you can spot a theme to these three DVDs.
Okay.
See if you can tell me there's a common link. So first of all, we've got Peep Show Series 7.
Okay, Series 7, right.
Series 7. Then we've got Whites by Alan Davis on DVD. And then we've got Walk on the Wild Side, Series 1. So, what? Oh, gosh, if only I could work out, what is the common thread?
Yes, so weird. Is it that one begins with P, one begins with W, and that two begin with W? And
that's what it is. Yeah, that's what it is. There. Okay, fine. Well, we'll just move on in that case. So what exactly is going on here, please?
Right, so what? So I've appeared in all those things.
There it is!
The question is, why? Why have I bought that? Because do you know what? I don't really ever watch things I've been in. I find, especially Peep Show, because it's so intense to watch, because it's just, intensely filmed. I sometimes just can't watch myself on it.
And sex scenes as well. I can't watch sex scenes.
It's full on to, yeah. So what? But maybe I want this. So this is before everything was available on demand. I can only think I wanted to add things that I'd done to the library of DVDs in case I ever felt like, but I don't know why I would have bought Walk on the Wild Side, because that's sort of for kids and I didn't have children then.
Walk on the Wild Side is, just to remind people, this was the classic thing of doing some funny voices over animals. You can't go wrong with that.
No, and that was Jason Manford as well. Tom Price is a knob.
Oh, yeah, Tom Price is a knob, Jason Manford. Yeah, of course, that's what he's going to become known as now. It might have been for a showreel, maybe? Or
might have been for a showreel, yeah.
You can use
might
that excuse. Been. I'm offering you up an excuse so you don't look like an egotistical maniac.
Yeah, I think definitely for a showreel. It just, was definitely,
Presents for friends and family.
No, because I've still got the Whites DVD next door. I don't know what's happened to the Walk on the Wild Side, although I actually now could show it to my kids. And Peep Show, I might have wanted. I think occasionally I get asked to sign Peep Show DVDs for like raffles and stuff, so it could have been for that.
Yeah. How often? Because you played, it's a pretty iconic role, Dobby in Peep Show. How often do you get the old recognised bit with that?
Not as much as I used to. It was quite full on at one point, and it was a bit much. And then I sort of used to think, haven't you heard my Radio 4 material? Like, well, I only ever get recognised for Peep Show, which I absolutely loved doing.
Can I just stop you there? I'd love to do a song for you. No, they've gone. Unbelievable.
Yeah, exactly. I'll do it a cappella. I don't want a guitar. Has anyone got a guitar, guys? What happens now is I do get recognised now and again, and that it's not necessarily, it's sometimes are you Dobby, but sometimes it's are you Izzy, or so then I sort of think you might have seen me on something else. But it is a bit weird having joined something that's such a cult thing and it being so iconic, and joined it when it was already really up and running as well. As quite, as a kind of strong-willed character who was a girlfriend for one of the main very beloved actors in it, you know.
Beloved.
But it was what a lucky first job to get, really.
I didn't realize that was your first job.
Well, I'd done a thing about Mary Shelley, which was very low budget and doesn't even appear on my IMDb, which is my first telly job, where we had like real wine and one real chicken to do these takes. It feels like a bit of a fever dream, but it was real. And Shelley was played by Kilroy's nephew, I seem to remember.
Robert Kilroy Silk off of Breakfast TV in the 90s.
Yeah, Kilroy's nephew played Shelley. I played Mary Shelley. A girl called Mary, who I'm still very good friends with, who I love, played my sister. And it was about the history of Shelley. And it was BBC Two. And it has disappeared into the ether. And if anyone knows where it is, I'd love to see it. It's called The Trouble with Love. I really would love that on my showreel. So that was my first telly job.
And you were playing who?
I was playing Mary Shelley, but it was all improvised. So it was one of those things where, you know, they have historians kind of going, Shelley was born in blah, blah. Then it will cut to a reconstruction.
Yes, love that.
But we had real wine and a real chicken. And they sort of said, we've got to get this done in one take.
Because, oh my God. That's so dangerous. So just so anyone listening, if you do bump into Izzy City on a train or whatever, do go up to her and say, oh my God, are you Mary Shelley? Because that would make your day.
Please, are you Mary Shelley? Did you play Mary Shelley? And
find us on Twitter and Instagram. At Toasterpot is the name we're trying to jam. It's simple like a sarnie filled with cheese and ham. At Toasterpot, at Toasterpot, at Toasterpot, I swear it's not a scam, I think.
So elsewhere in 2010, there we are, a bit of This Is England and some more Peep Show as well. You're really stocking up here. There's a few bits of... retire and you just want to have your legacy to be buried with or something. Here's a weird one. 22nd of October, a George Best portrait, A1 canvas art print poster. You've got a poster of George Best.
Best, and what year was that?
2010. Can I just say, making this podcast, one of my favourite sounds is the sound of a guest going, why the fuck did I buy that?
So 2010, I started going out with Ellis in January 2010.
Hello.
What month was this?
October.
Okay, so that was for his birthday, which is November the 3rd.
Oh.
Now, though, George Best is English, right?
George Best is Irish. He played for Northern Ireland.
He played for Northern Ireland. Okay.
He played for Manchester United.
Yeah, he's not Welsh. That's what I was thinking. because I don't know anything about football, but I just know that he's not Welsh.
So is there a question mark over why you bought this? How did this go down?
Why would I have bought Ellis a non-Welsh thing? That's the question. Because any football things that we have on the wall, I'm looking at one right now. It's a framed page from the Evening Post, a game between Preston and Swansea City. I think the date on it is perhaps the 80s. There are no things in this house that Ellis owns. Yeah. I'm going to go this far that aren't Welsh or connected to Wales. So why did I get? I know George Best is one of the best footballers of all time. So maybe it was that. But I might have been. It might have been that early days of kind of.
Well, just imagining.
He's a footballer.
He's a footballer. That's fine. But he's a Manchester United footballer who, like I say, certainly didn't play for Wales. I'm just wondering, did Ellis get this and go, oh, thank you so much. This girl's a keeper. Fuck's sake. Fuck is this?
Oh, was George Best a keeper or was he?
He was not a keeper. Yeah.
He was on the field. He was on the field. That's what they say, isn't it, in football?
Outfield.
Yes, I think that's very likely. Because in the early days in a relationship, you can make those mistakes, can't you? And the person sort of goes, oh, that's nice. And then just sort of gives it away.
Yes.
But, you know, years in, if I was to get him a poster of George Best now, I think he'd be like, what the fuck are you doing?
that's why he's got such a high voice. Just can't believe what you're... But no, what's going on?
So
I just don't understand this. Also, look, 22nd of October as well. So this is also for his birthday, we'd assume. You've bought him Let's Get Together vinyl by Gorky Zygotic Monkey back on safe Welsh territory there.
Yes. So I remember doing that. I remember this. This is the first birthday that we'd been together. Mm. And he'd not long been back from Australia because he went to Australia for 3.5. When we first met, we had 10 days together when we got together. I went to Sydney for 2.5 weeks. Yeah. I came back and we had 5 days together. Wow. Then he went to Australia for 3.5 months.
3.5 months?
Yes. So when he got back, you know, it was kind of all systems go. So I sort of went all out with this birthday, I think. So I was like, we've been apart for... So Let's Get Together. That was what I was saying.
Well, good, clever. I see. No need for a metaphor or art there. That's just a very literal present.
Just get the thing that says the thing you want to say.
I think, Ellis, you are simply George Best. Let's get together. That's what you were doing. That's what you were doing. I can't be the same always. Love you, baby, and I want you for the rest of my day. All right, look, 2011, Izzy, we have got, this is an interesting one. This is December 2011, EFT in your pocket, tapping into emotional freedom.
Oh, yeah. So Mum has always said that EFT, do you know anything about EFT?
No. Izzy Grigg wrote this. No, tell us.
So Izzy Grigg wrote it. I think that must be another reason. Whenever I come across another Izzy, I'm like, I've got to buy anything they produce.
You're very Izzy loyal.
I'm very Izzy loyal. I'm very Sutty loyal as well. There's a casting director from another country, can't remember which one, called Tony Sutty, a woman, T-O-N-I.
Yeah.
And I've got a book by Tony Sutty about auditions that I've actually never read, but I was like, it's another Sutty. I've got to support. Got to support the Suttys. There aren't many of us. So Izzy Grigg. Now, I've still got this EFT book. I don't know if I ever read it. My mum will go through phases of kind of going, oh, you must do this thing. Even something like making kefir from scratch, she told me I had to do. And like getting a piece of muslin, you know, like you use with babies, and like stretching it across a pot of some kind of pushing yogurt through it. And of course it all goes mouldy and starts to stink. And then, but the next week she's like, oh, I can't even remember telling you should make kefir. You must do EFT. So that's the kind of thing that will have happened here.
So you're sort of sitting in this kefir lab. Your house is ruined. And a week later she's going, I don't know what I'm doing that for.
Like, literally, what are you talking about? Don't remember any of it. Yeah. EFT. So that's, so I remember her saying that Mel B does it and swears by it. Wow. So you tap out the thing that you want to achieve or that you're nervous about, or I think it might have been, you know, maybe I was going through a stressful time or something, and it's a way of kind of like calming things down and kind of going, so you're supposed to tap in the rhythm. There's more to it than this. You don't just say, can I make more money, please, again and again. And you have to tap in certain places on your on your face or between your eyes and like on your cheekbones and stuff. It's a little bit like acupuncture points from what I understand.
And it's got elements of NLP, right? Because EFT stands for, and I'm looking this up because I've never heard of it, Emotional Freedom Therapy.
Yeah, what's NLP? What
Neuro-linguistic programming, where you...
Okay.
Every time, so for example, you'll see a lot of sports people do this now when they score a goal or whatever, they walk away and they'll hold their, they'll maybe pinch a bit of knuckle or something.
Okay.
And every time they succeed, they do that. So that reinforces and they sort of physically record that feeling.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that sounds good. Mm. That's a bit like a sort of suggestive thing, isn't it? That if you do that, then it... Yeah. I'm not too sure about stuff like that. I feel like I just get into this thing of like, oh, no, I didn't touch my hand in the right place. Therefore, I will never score another goal. Like, I don't think...
It would veer towards OCD for me very quickly. That's
yeah,
the danger.
It feels like it's a thing to set up, isn't it? Another thing that you have to do, perhaps. But I'm sure it works.
Fucking thing to do. I've got to do my EFT admin.
I've got to do the dishwasher. I've got to touch my hand for 10 hours. But I don't remember ever really reading this book. I think it's one of those ones that I sort of bought. So I think I will do this sometimes. If someone says, oh, do this thing, I'll sort of go, oh, yeah, I'll get a thing that will make me do the thing. And then I don't necessarily do the thing.
Yes.
So I can't vouch for the standard of Izzy's work.
No, okay, but she's called Izzy, so it's bound to be good.
It's going to be great.
And elsewhere as well, actually, got to be said, again, we're seeing lots of lovely Welsh themes here. Richard Burton, Under Milk Woods, wonderful stuff there. Very good, very good. And then, something which I'm really pleased to see, and I don't know if we've talked about her. I don't think I've talked about her before on this podcast, and she's my favourite writer. And you've gone crazy for Iris Murdoch.
Yes, oh my God, she's one of my favourite writers. I'm glad you like her.
I've done this, okay, and this is unprofessional because you are listening to this podcast, dear listener, but I've taken a picture, Izzy, and I'm going to show you on our camera. That is my bookshelf just there. That is my...
Oh, wow.
Just full.
All the Murdochs.
All the Murdochs. Well, nearly all of them. I am obsessed with her. Obsessed with her.
Oh, she's so brilliant, isn't she? So what do you love about her?
So I think that... It is the most emotional depth and most intricate detailing of people you could ever get into. But she's also got that incredible knack of grabbing onto the uncanny, of asking a question that you're like, what the fuck is going on? Like she'll use the tricks of an airport fiction thriller writer. Like there's a danger, there's a thing. So you kind of feel like it's you're very compelled to read it. You want to know more. It's not like a lot of other books would have a big emotional character or a big emotional situation and lots of in-depth writing, and you'd get a bit bored. But there's something about her that just keeps you going. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes complete sense. That I sometimes feel like it's like there's a sinister presence watching everything,
yes,
and you're never quite sure if it's going to come to anything, but you have to keep... Yeah, so it's not like a thriller where it's completely... plot driven, but I absolutely agree. There's a kind of real rhythm underneath it, often with, as you say, an uncanny or supernatural element or perhaps a melancholy element at other times. But yeah, I love her for the same reasons. I also think she's funny.
Yes.
And she really, really taps into those quirks that everyone has and the kind of hypocrisies within people and the lies that people tell themselves about what they're actually like.
Totally. And loads of, she writes men really well. She writes, all her characters have got ridiculous names. Like they're all called Octavius and things like that. They've all got absurd Christian names. I tell you, here's a sign of a good writer. It effortlessly remains in my brain because I can go through all the books on my shelves and be like, oh yeah, there was that one. And I just can't quite remember it. And there's a few. Philip Hensher is one. Have you read any Philip Hensher?
No.
Oh my God. Read The Northern Clemency by Philip Hensher.
Okay.
It's in my top five books. And if you like Iris Murdoch, you will adore him.
Okay.
I look at this book and I visualize it. I remember it. I remember what the characters look like. I remember what their houses look like. At no point does she say, this is what it looks like. It just goes in somehow. That's magic.
Yeah, well, that's the sign that you've really lived the book while you've been reading it. Here's an interesting thing. When I read any novel, there are one, two, three houses. This is without me thinking about it.
Yes.
There are three houses I know very well that, and this happened when I wrote my novel as well, that I imagine it to be in, and I never know which one it's going to be. One is my childhood friend Helena, who lived in an old vicarage that was very big and rambling with a massive garden. Yeah. And that, so whenever a house is big and posh, it's always Helena's
Amazing.
House. And they had a library and they had, you know, it was beautiful.
Yeah.
The second one is the childhood home that I grew up in till I was 18, which was a Victorian, an odd Victorian house with lots of kind of staircases that went up to a linking rooms, sort of doors, secret doors and stuff. That was quite a cool house to grow up in.
Love that.
So, but a lot smaller than Helena's. So that's for sort of another type of house. And then the other one is my friend Ruth from Chesson, who just had a sort of more of, I don't know, like a kind of a nice kitchen and a big, but like a completely different shape.
Yes.
More conventionally decorated and stuff. And I never know which house it's going to be. I never, ever conjure up a new house or layout, crucially, in my head.
Yeah.
It's, they are my three go-to houses. Do you do that, or do you see a new...
I see houses from my hometown. I think my hometown, coming from such a small, big personality of a place, and it was, and it had such a big impact on me and imprinted on me, I see different houses and I go into different houses from that hometown. So weirdly...
And are the interiors of them the actual interiors of the houses, or are they like ones that you imagine?
I imagine the interiors, but I imagine them... It very vividly based on what I've seen and gone past 100 times. For example, funny you should say this, there's an Iris Murdoch novel which it totally takes place next to the playing fields where I used to play rugby as a kid, because I used to look at those houses when I was hating every second of being on the rugby pitch, and I'd sort of imagine stuff going on in there. And then when I read this book years later, I kind of made that link, and now I look at that book and straight away I'm by the bit that floods next to the river in Monmouth.
Isn't that amazing?
It's
I find that really, it's almost a bit like dreams. It's like when I read Beth's book, I know she's got another one out, or has just written another one, hasn't she?
Oh, but the Beth first Murray, off book, of my wife, yes.
Off of your wife. Yes. That was in Ruth's house.
Oh, no way, really?
So, yeah, absolutely. I can look at any novel and go, yeah, that's Helena's
that's
house.
So
yeah, that's Nolston Place, my old house. Yeah, it's weird.
That is so interesting. Yeah. I love our stupid brains. So Iris Murdoch's amazing. If you've not read her, please do.
Please do. And I think a good one to start with, because I think it's a bit like Frank Zappa. You can go in with a little bit of an obtuse one and go, oh, this is a bit too... I think The Sea
totally
is a very good first one. And it's probably one of her most well-known ones, isn't
totally
it?
Totally. Yeah. That's the first one I read. Exactly that. And that's like my favourite novel ever. It's a wonderful story of a man who moves to like that kind of down at heel, out of season bit of season. Side, proper coast where people actually live rather than go on holiday, I guess. And he thinks he's seen a woman who he used to be in love with 20 or 30 years ago. And then a lot of the novel is him going, I'm not sure it's her.
Yeah, it's,
that's it.
And also, there are so many descriptions of his meals, and he sort of takes great care over, like, I'm going to boil an egg for 4 minutes. And
yeah,
it's almost like it's got recipes in it.
Have we done Iris Murdoch justice here? I hope we have, because it's important
to
me.
So.
It's important to me. I'll be very happy if people read her and get in touch with the show and say they've enjoyed
it.
All right, good. So that's Iris Murdoch sorted. Let's leap forward now, Izzy, right? I feel like we've spent a lot of time back in, you know, 2010, 2011. Here's an interesting one that I've just randomly clicked on. 2013.
Okay.
The 30th of December, 2013. There's two things that have arrived in the... Or three things, actually. You've got The Magus by John Fowles for £2.80. You've bought the ultra early pregnancy strip tests, pack of 15 strips, and the Clear Blue advanced digital ovulation test, pack of 20 strips.
A bit of fowls.
And then a bit of breeding.
Who else has read The Magus when they've been trying for a baby? I'd love to know. 30th of December, 2013.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. So, well, John Fowles is another... So I've read... I've read three books by John Fowles. Mm. I don't want this whole podcast to be about literature, although why not? It's your podcast.
Sure, no, it's
be. But The Magus is one of my favourite books ever. And I think
I've never read it.
Yeah, I'll read the Clemency, Northern Clemency, if you read The Magus.
Thank you.
And I think you would really love it. If it's got that kind of really odd, almost, there's a kind of ritualistic, odd, sinister, power-playing undertone that becomes an overtone, really. And it's also about a Greek island, and it's very weird and it's wonderful.
Right.
It's
fine.
Yeah.
Sold.
So that's very good. I had already read it at that point, so I might have bought that for someone else, although it's just after Christmas.
Yes.
So It might be someone whose birthday is in January, or I might have lost it. And I always like to have it on the shelf, even though I never reread books normally, but I've read that twice.
Can I just say, and I know it's annoying to talk about Alice all the time, but what's interesting about this is that you have my wife and I are obsessed with books, and you keep reminding me of Ellis, because I remember sitting on a train with him. He'd come to do my show on Radio Wales, and he had his little notepad of all the books that he had to read, and he kept adding books into that. And I looked at it and I was like, fuck, I do that as well. I keep a very serious list, and it's an important part of my life. The list of books people recommend in conversation, like I Will Now Be Adding the Magus to it. And then he lost that book, didn't he? He lost the little book.
Oh, yeah, he did. And it was really, he was heartbroken.
Yes.
Yes, because I think that was the book. I think what he used to do is, if someone recommended a book, he would write it down in his little notebook, and they were kind of books that he needed to buy. So it was really annoying when he lost it.
Yeah,
we've got so many books. I mean, looking around me now, we've probably got 400, 500 books in this room.
And yet here we see the two different weather fronts meeting, because you've got, and this is what I've found so torturous about the last 9 years, the thing I really always want to do is just go and read. And then kids come along. And this is where it's happening right now, in this moment on your Amazon history. You're buying books still to keep the books nearby, but also pregnancy testing. The chances are goodbye books.
Yeah, no, it's a real kind of snapshot, isn't it, of a bit of your life. Although I do read as much as I used to. I just don't get any sleep. Like, I can't go to sleep without reading for about 20 minutes, even when they were really little. I think when they were newborns, I obviously wouldn't have done, but pretty early on, I was sort of, I can't not read before I go to bed, apart from when you're really exhausted in the early days of having children. So,
well, and the phone doesn't cut the mustard, does it? The phone's not the same, because the phone isn't.
The phone not only doesn't cut the mustard, I think the phone, I can't sleep after looking at my phone, because I start to reply to an email, or I get a Twitter message and I think I'm going to forget to reply. My phone is just full of emails to myself, genuinely, saying, reply to so-and-so on Twitter, reply to so-and-so on WhatsApp. It's like,
disaster.
This isn't right.
It's such a disaster. Also, do you know, think when you send yourself, I always do this, I send myself a reminder email, and as soon as I've sent it, I get a bing saying that I've got an email, and I will always go, oh, I've got an email, every time.
Oh my God, totally. Well, it's like when I got the email today, just before we started recording, saying someone's logged into your Amazon account in North London. And I was like, oh my God, I'm going to have to delay the podcast. Someone's trying to access my Amazon account. Oh, it's the person I'm recording with.
So the end of 2013, this is a big... Was this child number one on the way?
So this is child number one, and I got pregnant in... I think we decided to take Christmas off because I got a little bit stressed about getting pregnant. And so we said, right, that's it, we'll take Christmas off. So that must have been me kind of going, right, it's going to be January the 1st. Tomorrow. Well, no, the day after tomorrow.
Yes.
This is on the 30th of December.
Yes.
New year, new start. I'll get the most romantic thing in the world, the ovulation test.
Yes.
And then the pregnancy test. And then I got pregnant in the January, I think. February, March, April, May, June, July, August, September, October. Yes. Yeah. So they were the last lot of pregnancy things I had to buy, because I was pregnant within 2 weeks after that.
It
obviously between bouts of reading The Magus, because it's a very long book.
it's a very kind of weird moment when you make that decision. If you're lucky enough to be in a place in your life where you can make that decision and start to think about having babies, it's an odd moment. I remember Beth and I having that conversation, and it was because loads of other people have been having babies. It was pure peer pressure. I swear to you, Izzy, we were just going to get more dogs. And
but that's why people do it, or at least... That's what I think I would have wanted to do it anyway. Like, if we lived on our own in a very remote area and never saw anyone in the whole world, I think I still probably would have wanted a child. But definitely, that's the thing that, and for years and years, I didn't know if I wanted them, and not many of my friends had them. And then it was a sort of a year, I don't know if you found this as well, where suddenly loads of people were like, we're having a baby.
Yeah.
And I was like, that was the thing that kind of pushed me into...
It goes crazy. It goes crazy. And look, it dominates 2014 on your Amazon purchase history. There's a really interesting... this is incredible. So in June 2014... So in June 2014, you've bought the Penguin Book of Baby Names. Fine, 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 fine.
Okay.
You've bought Scottish babies' names, and then very quickly afterwards, Welsh names.
Of course.
You can see what's going on there.
So it's 5 months pregnant then.
Right.
So I've got the generic book of baby names, and I've obviously thought that might not have enough Celtic names in it.
Yeah.
I'm half Scottish.
Right.
So that's the connection there. Mm-hmm. So I was always fighting for a Scottish name because also my dad died in 2011, and I've always thought, oh, I'd love to have, you know, a Scottish name in there. So we're thinking about Heather at one point, okay, and there are lots of really lovely Scottish name, Angus as well, I really like.
Oh, yes.
But, you know, Ellis, for all his softly spoken mannerisms, he was very firm about baby names. And he was like, if we're not going to live in Wales, his voice has changed a bit, actually, hasn't it, since I started to, no, let me try again. If we're not going to live in Wales, they've got to have Welsh names. And it was an absolute no negotiation point.
Wow.
That they absolutely had to have Welsh names.
What, so did he sort of come in one night and saw you idly browsing Scottish baby names and just went, I'm sorry.
Chuck it out of the window.
Yeah, exactly. Get rid of that.
Yeah. I loved your dad, but no. I made a shortlist and we didn't decide at all. And and with both kids, because I've got a son now as well, we left it until the very last day of having to register them. And they were just called, well, but Betty was called Babby Bach, which is Welsh for little baby. So we could still call her BB, because that was her name for months. And everyone was kind of, so when are you going to give her a name? And it was just like, I don't know. So, yeah.
Betty's a beautiful name, though.
It's the Welsh spelling, of course.
Well, of course, one T, right?
One T and an I.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is it B-E-T-I?
But that's fine, because that's Welsh by stealth. That's quite clever. Because Betty, it's a gorgeous, beautiful name. And it's Welsh.
Yeah, so that was the thing. I was like, I think we need a name that English people can pronounce. Mm. So that's it. So that narrowed it down, actually.
Yes.
Because there are lots of really beautiful Welsh names, but I knew that they'd constantly get them.
Well,
I mean, Griff, because it's spelt with a U.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know,
no one needs to be called Gruff. And Robin Morgan, who has been on this podcast and talked about this, of course, has a Ewan. Welsh for John.
Oh, yeah.
But he's going to be called Ian. Yeah. He's going to be spending his life called Ian. You know, no one needs that.
Yeah.
No one needs that.
It's tricky.
Loads and loads of kid stuff then suddenly lands on your Amazon purchase history. We don't need to go through all the nipple shields. We don't need to go through the star projection.
Major problems breastfeeding. I mean, I don't know how many nipple shields I bought over the years, but nipple shields were the thing that enabled me to carry on breastfeeding.
It's horrific. Beth went through with breastfeeding, and she had the worst birth ever with the first kid. The pain of breastfeeding, she still says, was worse than the child.
I remember such a stabbing. So I remember even with the nipple shields, which helped a lot, so I would get Betty and she'd latch on, and Ellis used to say to me, you're stamping on the floor so loudly that the neighbours are going to think there's something wrong. Because the pain, it's a pain unlike any other. I used to stamp my foot onto the floor because I couldn't cry out because it would scare her. Yeah. And you do sort of have these moments of going, what am I doing? I mean, I'm glad I did it. I do that thing where you look back with rose-tinted glass and go, remember all those days I used to breastfeed her and watch Downton Abbey. And there were really lovely moments as well. But I would say if it's painful and if you're having major problems and it's damaging you emotionally, there really is no shame. We did mixed feeding from the beginning, and then the second kid just wouldn't breastfeed. So
fine.
I expressed for a bit, and then that was it.
Because I was very much like, don't worry about it. You don't need to. This isn't, you know, just go on the bottle. And Beth was the same. And she used to, it's funny though, that thing of that really rings a bell when you look back on it now. I mean, I didn't go through the physical pain, obviously. But you'd go back and go, oh gosh. Oh, you know, it would be like walking into a torture chamber that you used to live in now and going, oh, you're on the rack, are you?
You're totally. Yeah, good. Yeah, yeah. Don't worry. You're going to be fine. You'll be having a beer in a year. It'll be a distant memory. I remember saying to Mum before Betty was born, I don't want to breastfeed in public, especially as with the added thing of sometimes being recognised, that's like a slightly tricky extra corner of things sometimes with something like that. So Mum said, you won't care. You absolutely won't care. If your baby's hungry, you'll just want to feed it. And that was not the case for me. So if I was out, I felt so, so self-conscious about breastfeeding. And I really hated myself for feeling like that. But I did. I couldn't deny it. So I got this sort of thing that you put, which probably I got from Amazon as well. It's like a sort of, I don't know if Beth had one as well, like a kind of piece of material that you put over your boobs, basically, and it's got a hoop at the top of it so that you can look down. It's very clever and see, you can see the baby because it's kind of open at the top, but no one can see you. And she just used to, so used to get the nipple shield on. The nipple shield has to be sterilized. And then she used to go onto the boob and then just pull back the whole piece of material like a magician's cloth, so, which was worse than me not having it on in the first place. People's eyes would be drawn to this, you know, this big movement, and then it would be like, da-da.
Kind of like the Wizard of Oz revealing himself. Here I am! That's amazing. Is that Mary Shelley breastfeeding over there? I think it is. Oh, God, I love it.
I thought she was dead.
Ooh, I don't want to hear no more crying. Just come on, let me know what you've been buying.
28th of March 2015, a replacement remote control for the Hitachi CLE-958. The Hitachi CLE-958, it's a classic piece of machinery.
So is that the DVD player?
Yeah, I think so.
Which we now don't use at all. But we've just had to buy another remote. In fact, that's probably my most recent purchase, or at least one of them, is a replacement remote for the telly, which my son has just, it's gone. We've searched for it for hours. So, but I didn't realise that you can, there's an app on your phone that will control your telly. You may know this.
Fuck
it absolutely
off.
Blew my mind.
Go fuck yourself. What?
I know. So he hid the remote. We looked in all the usual places. Is it in the shoes? Is it in, he's got this obsession with opening sheets of seaweed that we like to eat. Although, is it in the seaweed? No, search for hours. I was like, how are we going to turn the telly off? Because it's just, it's on, but we can't do anything to it. We can't, are we going to unplug it on the mains? And I just Googled remote and it came up. There are multiple apps for every telly, it seems.
What?
Where you just download it, pair it with your telly, which I can do, and I'm so bad at technology, but I was able to do it immediately. Log it onto the Wi-Fi, and then it will, you can control it.
This is the kind of thing this podcast does so well. It's great life advice, this. This is great life advice. So you can bin off the remote control. Because the other thing about remote controls is that you often end up living on 0.5% battery power. Nothing pushes a AAA more than a TV remote control. And you do the thing where you maybe bang it a couple of times, warm up the batteries, and then you press down so hard on the button that you can hear the remote control creaking. I think, I'm going to put this out there, there is nothing in my house that gets more physical abuse than the TV remote control. It's a terrible life.
Oh my God, yeah, totally. Like, yeah, we've got this sound bar under the telly that I don't even think we use, that we got when we bought the telly.
Yeah, no one uses their soundbar.
Because we're just not...
No,
we're just not technical people at all. But our friend was like, get this soundbar, I've got it, it's really good. But you have to aim the remote over the soundbar.
Yes,
so the soundbar blocks the signal.
Yes.
And it's defunct.
I cannot tell you, right? My in-laws come and stay and I... Tom, the remote control's not... Lift it up! You have to pick it up over the soundbar. Yes.
I know.
And so the other day, in a fit of fury, because we never use the soundbar because it's too bassy and our neighbours can hear it, because you get all that... And who needs that when my kids are just watching YouTube anyway?
Sure.
So in a fit of fury about the number of people who kept complaining about having to lift up the remote control, I've dismantled the soundbar.
Oh, well done. Well, that should be my next... When you see my next purchase being a book about how to dismantle a soundbar, you'll know that I've done that too.
I tell you what, Izzy, Shane Meadows, Iris Murdoch and soundbar dismantling. We have so much in common. So much in common. And the nipple shields as well. I love a nipple shield.
Oh, yeah. Put on nipple shields.
There's lots of wonderful things here. It's lovely kids things. They've got your nappies for the kids. You're getting Play School Mr. Potato Head. Lovely stuff. Feeling Good, the new mood therapy. That's quite interesting there. And that's July.
Yeah, that's from Mum again. That was Mum. I've never read that. But it's in the yellow section, I think. Is it yellow?
That's right.
It's a yellow cover, right?
Yes.
So my friend Amy came round and our house, we're very messy. She came into this room, which has got about 500 books in it, and was like, I'm going to arrange all your books in colour. I want to do that. And we were like, oh my God, you're brilliant. So I now, if I know the colour of the spine or cover of a book, I can find it immediately. And I remember that Feeling Good... Although I'd love
it's
it to be
yellow.
Called Feeling Good. I think it's got the G on it.
No G. Feeling good, no G.
Feeling good, guys. I know that that's yellow because it's in the yellow section. I've never read it, but that was another Mum thing.
You have a visual brain. don't
yeah.
you?
Yeah, I think
you,
I must.
It's yeah.
Yeah.
You see the things,
the
you remember the things
well.
Regularly.
Yeah.
Yes, the houses as
yeah.
well. Into the Grey Zone, a neuroscientist explores the border between life and death.
Oh, yeah. So that I'm really, well, I'm not quite as interested in this as I used to be, but I went through a phase of being very interested, for whatever reason, in reading about brain injuries. I think I might have watched a documentary about a brain injury and found it very fascinating, sort of. It's not something you necessarily hear that much about. So sometimes I do that. I sort of bought that book and I think another one.
Yeah.
This is going to hurt covers, which is brilliant by Adam Kate. Covers, not brain injuries necessarily, but that medical stuff that I also quite interested in. And there's another one called Do No Harm, which
yes.
is by Henry Marsh. And that's it's a bit more about operations and stuff because he's a surgeon. And that's very good as well.
I couldn't read it, but Henry Marsh is a brain surgeon. And the I've read about half that book and I have to sort of read a chapter and then just leave it because
it's intense. It's very well written, isn't it?
So yeah,
Into the Grey Zone is, sorry, go on.
Well, the fragility of life, you read it in that book, like, there's this guy who's a brain surgeon and you think I'm in safe hands. And he's kind of in his book going, not so much. I'm just poking around with a scalpel. All
yeah,
the best.
I'm a human being. I might not have had breakfast. I know. So Into the Grey Zone is, I don't think you should read it. If you can't, that's my advice.
Okay,
I think
good.
It would probably be too much. But it's very interesting. It's about brain injuries. And he talks about how a process was devised to sense whether people with severe brain injuries who were in an uncommunicative state could understand. And they put them into a thinker, some kind of scanner, a machine, and they asked them a question. And these are people who haven't been able to communicate with their families for years. They asked them a question. And if they imagine playing tennis, they can trace the brain activity. And that means yes. So it was it was a game changer because they could ask them a question and they asked them to imagine playing tennis. If the answer was yes, then they see this pattern. Something happens to your brain when you imagine playing tennis. You have to really imagine it. Amazing.
Wow.
Amazing.
What if you didn't like tennis? Is there any problem?
Yeah. What if you're like, I want to imagine playing football. Not everyone likes tennis. I mean, I love tennis. I'm surprised there aren't actually more tennis, not playing it, watching it. More tennis purchases on my Amazon, actually.
Have you read, and we've talked about this on the podcast before, and we're about to get into lockdown, by the way, just to end the podcast, we're going to just have a quick look through your lockdown purchases. Have you read the Andre Agassi Open book?
No, but someone told me about it the other night and I can't wait because there's a big revelation about his hair, isn't there?
Yeah. His hair stuck on with basically hope. That's all it was. It's incredible.
It's incredible. I used to really, really fancy Agassi. That was the thing. That was the year I really got into tennis, was the summer of 92, I think.
Yes.
And it was all Agassi, Iva Nisevic, Navratilova.
That's when I fell in love with Jennifer Capriati.
Why not? I remember Jennifer Capriati. She was beautiful. Yeah.
Bloody hellfire.
I know.
Bloody hellfire. So July 2020, the infant foot measurer. Love that. Getting the old, like, I used to love that when I was a kid, going to Clark's, getting the foot measurer.
I know.
Out. That's very satisfying.
It's so much harder doing it at home. You realise actually it's not that, because also, the one that I bought, it was in like European measurements. And so.
Great, you're 32. You're a 32.
Yeah,
I didn't even know. Yeah, yeah. That's why we had to leave Europe. The foot sizing alone was the reason we had to go.
Yeah, yeah.
Loads of great books as well. Nikki French, The Lying Room. She's brilliant. Lucy Foley. Oh, the brilliant Lucy Foley. The Guest List. That's a fantastic book.
Yes, I only read thrillers in lockdown.
Yeah, yes.
So you'll see so many orders, people like Liz Nugent and Erin Kelly, Nikki French.
They're all brilliant.
Lisa Jewell.
Yes. Oh, Lisa Jewell's fantastic as well.
Yeah.
You also bought paddling pool, the obligatory paddling pools we all bought.
Yes,
in lockdown.
We don't have a garden, but we bought that because we were going on holiday to Berkhamsted, which people found funny because it's like a commuter town. So in that bit, we were allowed to go on holiday in 2020, we went to Berkhamsted to an Airbnb, which was like on a residential road. And on the first night we were there, this couple from next door came and was like, "Holy, are you from are you the Airbnb people? The bins go out on a Tuesday." Like, it was like a family road. It was lovely. And we got one with a big garden because we don't have one. And that's why we bought the paddling pool. And then we gave it to the childminder when we came back because we were like, we're blatantly not going to set up a paddling pool in the living room. That
I think this could be a thing, suburban tourism.
Yeah, well, we went because it's near my mum and it's near my sister. And it was like, and Berkhamsted is beautiful as well.
Beautiful. Yeah. And, you know, I'm sure, you know, classic parking, great parking, great parking, transport links.
Big wide streets.
Yeah, it's so good. It's so good. All right. And let's just have a look at the last few things you've been buying, Izzy. We have got Cool Runnings on Prime Video. Do you want to explain that?
Yeah, that's Ellis. So Ellis, when Ellis buys things on Prime Video on the telly, it gets them from my account. So I get an email going, "You have bought the best of Welsh football 1982. And I'm like, "What? No, I haven't." And he has to watch lots of sports things for his podcast.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. So Cool Runnings, that's Ellis's. Is that that's a film, isn't it?
Yeah, there's an expense. You know, the Social Distant podcast, it's making a lot of money. There's no way he should be buying this off.
I'm paying for...
Yes.
And then when I do my tax, I have to list the things and sort of say, well, that was Ellis's. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, someone needs to sort out your admin.
I know.
Listen, there's so much glamour in your purchase history of late. Limescale and detergent remover for all washing machines and dishwashers. And this is what we want to find out about, you know, an iconic sitcom actor like yourself, Izzy. You know, even you have to clean a washing machine.
Well, our washing machine broke in lockdown. It flooded or it wouldn't open or something. Anyway, we had to get a guy to come in. And it was that real bit, you know, where it was like, do we need them to come in? It's a very difficult time. No one was supposed to come in the house. Anyway, he did. And we all wore masks and all that. And I remember it being a really big event because no one had been in the house for months. And he pulled the washing machine out. And there was the Gareth Bale magnet under there. And I've been doing this thing every night. I don't do it so much anymore because we're not all in, called Sooty Sweep on Twitter.
Which is the best thing on Twitter.
Thank you very much.
It's amazing. Please explain what that is at once.
Well, every night, and this started in lockdown because we were all in all the time, I would sweep up what was on the kitchen floor and then I would take a photo of it. And I have never, ever doctored it or moved anything. That's my rule. Apart from once on the night that Dominic Cummings got found out with the Barnard Castle thing, I put a very good bit of satire in the form of an A4 piece of paper with a message on it. But that was very obvious. I don't add anything to it. And this Gareth Bale magnet kept getting swept up at the beginning of me posting these Sooty Sweep things. And then lots of fans of Sooty Sweep would be like, "Is the Gareth Bale magnet going to be in Sooty Sweep tonight?" And I was like, "I don't know, guys. You'll have to wait till midnight." Then it just went missing. And everyone was like, "Where's Bailey? Where's Bailey?" And I was like, "It's gone. Bailey has gone." And then when the guy pulled out the washing machine, there it was, dusty, right under the washing machine where my son must have pushed it under.
So can you imagine if the plumber was a fan of the Sooty Sweep? He'd have lost his mind.
Oh, my God, you're so right. Yeah. No, he was a fan of Limescale detergent.
He said,
"If you don't want this to happen again, you have to." Which I, of course, guess what, Tom? That's gone straight into the cupboard under the stairs, and I've never done it.
Never touched it since. The joys of why we buy this stuff on Amazon. Okay, final thing, Izzy, and I'm hoping that there's some gold here. It might be something you bought for someone else. This might be a dead end, but I'm fascinated to see. You have bought on the 17th of September, so a few weeks ago, Ancestry DNA, a genetic ethnicity test. Explain yourself.
I did it. I did the test and I sent it off. And you have to spit into a test tube. Have you ever done it?
No.
You have to produce so much saliva. It's like ectoplasm or something. I could not believe how much saliva you have to produce. It's like an inch of saliva in a test tube. Yeah, I know. It was gross. So you're sort of like, oh my God, they better find out a lot of stuff for the amount I'm having to produce. Anyway, it was very interesting. I found out, I knew that my family was Jewish on my mum's side, but they told me kind of where my ancestors came from. I obviously knew that dad was Scottish and I've got this, you know, half Scottish, but they told me again, you know, more details about which areas of Scotland. I found out that I'm 1% Welsh and 1% Irish. I was like, okay. But most interestingly, it puts you, like, it gives you a list of loads of other people who share your DNA. It's really odd. So you've got all these second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, upwards cousins. Yeah. Oh. And I'd say that 90% of those relatives lived in Portland, Oregon. And I've got no idea why.
This is amazing.
I know.
Also, Portland, Oregon, that's all full of hipsters. I mean, those are your people, isn't it?
Yeah.
Literally.
I need to go and go to them and get them to cook for me.
God, this is incredible.
I know,
I love
it's really,
this.
Really weird. So I spent, I spent kind of an hour or two just clicking through these names and going, you're in Portland, Oregon. You're in Portland, Oregon. It's really, really interesting.
This is so amazing. You know what? One of the things we always try and do, we try and set out to do on this podcast, there's two things that we try and do on My Mate Bought a Toaster. One is to encourage people not to buy all this crap on Amazon, because we always go through stuff and think, why did I buy all that stuff? Mm. That happens a lot. The second is to find out who you are. And literally, here we are at the end of the podcast, we found out who you are. Mission accomplished, Izzy. Mission accomplished.
Yes.
I love it. One thing we haven't talked about, please, is your book. You have got a book out now. Let's give that a massive big fat plug,
thank
please.
Thank you. Yes, I've got a book out called Jane Is Trying, and it is about a lady called Jane who is very anxious and very fun, and she lives in London, works in advertising, discovers that her fiancé has been having an affair, moves back to her hometown of Foley in the Peak District, which is not Matlock but has some similarities to Matlock, where I'm from, and then kind of has to piece her life back together, and they're also trying for a baby. So the title has three meanings. So she's trying for a baby, she's trying to change, and she can be a little bit trying. And I think people at some, like people who've read it, of my friends and sometimes be like, I was like shouting at the book going, come on Jane, you can do it. But it was really fun to write. I think I'm hopefully going to write another novel, because I've really enjoyed it.
I should hope so. It's done really well. I keep hearing brilliant things about it. That's mainly you retweeting praise, but that's fine.
Yeah, listen, you can retweet praise when it's a model. Listen, when you're a literary champion.
Never, ever stop.
The retweeting praise thing is so hard, because I think the key is to quote tweet it. So you can do a bit of a self-deprecating thing of like, can't believe that Paul McCartney's just read Little Old Me. Whereas if you literally just retweet, by the way, Paul McCartney probably hasn't read my book, I'm just using this as an example, I would love him to. If you literally just retweet Paul McCartney going, this book is great, I think that looks a bit like branding or whatever. It's really weird, isn't it? It's kind of very nuanced.
Listen, the whole thing about retweeting praise is, as long as it's done with, well, you do it with 1% of your charm and it's absolutely fine. A little bit of charm, a little bit of self-deprecation. Use your Welsh deprecation, that 1% of you that is a self-deprecating Welsh woman. And it's fine, it's allowable and it's lovely, and it has done well. I'm so pleased to see it, and I hope you write more.
Thank you.
And always come on this podcast and tell us which house it's really set in. That's the most important thing.
Oh yes, I will.
Izzy, thank you for coming on My Mate Bought a Toaster.
Hooray! Oh, thanks Tom, that was so much fun. I loved it.
Izzy Sutty. Hooray! That's it, guys. Thank you so much for listening. That is the end of this episode. That is the end of this series as well, of My Mate Bought a Toaster. Series 4, done and dusted. Planning to be back in the new year. Fingers crossed, touch wood. So I'll let you know more about that. Probably on the Twitters, @ToasterPod, and I'll chuck the odd bit of audio up here if there is a new series coming, which there will be a new series coming. Don't ever doubt me, guys. There will be a brand new series, but I'll probably drop a trail on here when we are ready. That's it, guys. Thank you so much for listening. As ever, thank you for all your lovely messages. It's always nice to hear from you. Thank you for all the people who have chipped in to all the various forms of donating money to this ridiculous podcast. It's really, really appreciated. Thank you if you found time to do that. And that's it. You're free to go about your lives. See you in 2022. Ooh. I'm thinking of you when I'm without you. I'm thinking about you, please don't believe me. Don't deceive me. By the way, after you part, I can't be the same always. I can't be the same always. I still love you, baby, and I don't want you for the rest of my day. I won't ever say we're through. I won't ever say we're through. All I want, baby, just a little kiss from you. All I want, baby, just a little kiss from you. All I want, baby, just a little kiss from you.